The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on November 14, 2021. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see you all today. Well, this weekend, the Minnesota Orchestra played the Songs of a Wayfarer by Gustav Mahler. And Ann and I went to the concert. Some other pieces as well. But in the Songs of a Wayfarer, which I've always loved, by Mahler, it tells a very interesting story. Four songs. And in the beginning, the first song, I believe it's a mezzo-soprano. She is singing of that her love, her sweetheart, is being married, not to her, but he's to be married now. And in fact, I believe that's kind of how it opens. And she's in real torment over this. And everything is very dark and sad. She goes back to her dark little room. She sings, and just the whole world is just very sad. And that's where the first song ends. And then, beginning with the second song, it's morning. Sun is shining, birds are singing, flowers are blooming, and it's a wonderful day. And it's kind of bright and cheery. But by the end of that song, she wonders then if maybe now her luck will change and she'll begin to have better luck. But then she says, nein, nein, it's in German. But no, no, this will never be for me. And so ends the second song. And then in the third song, it's just this torment. It's like she's being stabbed with the pains of the sorrow she's experiencing. And she's tossed. It was very stormy, the third song. And it still ends in a fairly restless sort of way. And then opening with the fourth song, again, maybe it's now somewhat subdued, quieted down a bit. But still a great deal of sorrow is there. And then the mood shifts. It's kind of handled by the orchestra there, but it just begins to shift a bit. And she continues to make the observations. Well, then she says at some point, too, about her lover, or the fellow that she now no longer will be married to. She calls him Augenblau. Oh, Augenblau, why did you look at me? And that's how they fell in love and whatever, but now it won't be for her. And so she was singing that whenever she looks at the blue skies, it makes her think of her lost love now. And the golden meadow reminds her of her. Maybe off in the distance she sees the golden hair of his new love, his bride. But it doesn't quite have the torment that it had before. And then it shifts even further. And finally, she begins to sing. If I can keep myself together here. That all is well. All is well. Everything will be all right. Everything will be all right. And she's singing, alles, alles, das Lieb, das Leid, das Welt, das Traum, Lieb, that's love and Leid, sorrow, Welt, world, Traum, dream, all is well. And that's how it ends. It ends with the word Traum, dream. It's interesting. I hadn't listened to this music for quite a long time. I really loved Mahler in my youth. listened to all of his music quite a bit. I hadn't really heard this piece in a while. And coming back to it now and looking at the words and just feeling the way Mahler brings out this intense feeling that's throughout the pieces in the music. It's just an amazing piece, really. But I didn't really quite appreciate. So it starts out the difficulty she's feeling. And then the next morning, feeling better. Maybe things will change. But then she falls back into her dark thinking. It becomes very stormy, painful. But when she had that lighter moment, she was looking at, there's the sun and the birds and the flowers. She falls back into her, but it won't be this way for me. And she's back into feeling this intense pain and sorrow. And just the upheavals of her emotions and sadness and all of that. And still coming into the fourth, but maybe now somewhat subdued. But then it really breaks away. And she sings it all. All is right. In that first time where she kind of cheered up a bit, she was noting the world around her, not quite so dwelling on her own sorrow. It's cheering up a bit. But then she goes back into the sorrow. But now, at the end, she really comes out of it. That all is well. Before, when she cheered up, and she slipped back into it, it was like it was a contrast with this sorrowful pain she's feeling in her life. But now in the end, the second one is rather uplifting and cheery. The second one now, it's different. And it's settled. And she's recognizing that all is well. And this is including there's love and then there's sorrow. And the world at large contains this love and sorrow. And it's all as if dream or in a dream. We might have some sorrowful, painful experiences. But we can awaken from that. But I think the real thing to note here is that in both cases where she settled down, one not in a lasting kind of way, because she was sort of contrasting it with her time of pain and sorrow, her thoughts that bring her pain and sorrow. But now, it's like it's including the whole world, including both love and sorrow. All is well. All is as if as in a dream, where we can awaken from this. But it's getting outside of herself, forgetting herself, letting all of that drop away, where she finds some solace and some peace and calmness of mind and a large expanding mind that's embracing everything. It's like finding at last maybe a real ending to this otherwise very restless state, though the music itself kind of leaves you just wondering how that is. I'll leave that to you. You can listen to how Mahler treats that, but it has a very remarkable ending, I think. I was thinking about talking on something along those lines even before I went to the concert the other night. But yesterday or the day before, somebody wrote to me. Right now, some of you are in the class, I think they're doing this class on Huang Po. And I've asked people to write in if you have a passage here in John Blofeld's The Teaching of Huang Po. And so people have been sending in things. But if you're in the class and you want to send in more things, that'd be fine. But we're pretty well loaded, at least for this Monday, I think, or tomorrow. But this is from someone who, I don't think he's in the class, unless he signed up late, and it wasn't on the original roster. But just brought up this quote from Huang Po. And I wrote back to him. I said, I might use this in a class. I just mentioned that we have this class, and I might use it. Well, I think I'm going to use it now, because given the thoughts that I was thinking about for a talk today, I wasn't getting very far with it, but then the leader by or the Songs of a Wayfarer that I listened to kind of sparked it in a different sort of way. And now with this piece that showed up from this fellow who had asked about it, this really ties in, I think, too, with what I had to say here about the Songs of the Wayfarer. So I think I just want to talk about this morning and may mention it in class again. But this is what he had asked about here. This is section 8 from the Zhengzhou record of Blofeld here on page 35. And it says, our original Buddha nature is, in highest truth, devoid of any atom of objectivity. It is void, omnipresent, silent, pure. It is glorious and mysterious, peaceful joy. And that is all. Enter deeply into it by awaking to it yourself. That which is before you is it, in all its fullness, utterly complete. There is not beside. I thought that was very interesting, what Huang Po is pointing out here. Our original Buddha nature, you know, what we truly are, which isn't how we might see ourselves, as me separate from the world and from other and from the things that I dream or see or think or feel. Our original Buddha nature is just simply this, which we pay no attention to because we are caught up by, you know, one thing or another. But he says our original Buddha nature is, in highest truth, if you want to really get down to what is taking place, what are we? What is this? He said it is, in highest truth, devoid of any atom of objectivity. It isn't a matter of me here seeing it out there, that there it is. I'm somehow apart from it in some way, looking at it or contemplating it or thinking about it or reaching for it or running from it or some aspect of it. In highest truth, it isn't this at all. He says it's devoid of any atom of objectivity and, for that matter, subjectivity. There is no separate I sitting in this, contemplating or looking at or reacting to or seeing something else out there. It's like the woman in the Songs of a Wayfarer. She saw the things out there were giving her sorrow and pain, and I, well, were they? And her? But later, seeing this in totality, all will be all right, she sings at the end. Because it'd be all right, because it is now. And if we drop the self and the objectivity, what it is seen and heard and felt by you or thought, is that something apart from you? We'll cast it that way and look at it that way. Just as me here now thinking something or seeing something, the world is split in that way, but that's just the way we've taken it, the way we see it, the way we put it together. Now, there's all this sorrow and pain, but of course it could be great rejoicing and expectation. You know, she will marry this fellow at one point, no doubt. That's what she was thinking, and being very happy and elated by all of that, only to be crushed and dashed later in all her hopes and dreams. But there we are. But if we were to see that, so you are something then apart from just this? And the one thing, too, is that just this, whatever it is peaceful. It's wholeness, it's totality. There's nothing outside it, as Jean Paul alludes to here, very more or less says. And in its true nature, it is utterly peaceful. Are you something other than this? If you think so, if you want to see things this way, if you occupy yourself with that kind of a take on just what is unfolding here moment by moment, well, that's fine, but it is what it is. And there's a great deal of pain there and sorrow. Joy, too, temporarily, here and there. It shows up and then goes. And there's followed by. But without losing any of this, we can realize that it is devoid of any atom of objectivity, he says. This is our original nature. He says our, but of course, then it kind of puts it into, we're using language, speech that sets us off from things. Yeah, language kind of forces this from us. But if we really settle down, he said, in its highest truth, it's devoid of this, in this objectivity. It is void. Blofield uses the term void. That's empty. Nagarjuna says shunyata, which is very often translated as emptiness. That it is void. It is empty. Omnipresent. No matter where, of course, it's always here. Even though it looks like it's here and there, we see the world objectively out there, separate and apart from me here, the subject. And now I can go over there. I want those things over there. I want to go over there. I don't want this. I want to get away from this. Now the mind is tossed around again and vexed. And life becomes difficult for us. But if we see this true nature, devoid of objectivity, it is omnipresent, he says, and empty of any kind of, the word I tend to use now is, it's non-substantial. This doesn't contain any kind of somethingness to it, or weight, or pressure, or whatever, other than what we give it, what we assign to it, what we say is there. And I feel that. Well, if we didn't play that game, you wouldn't have to experience that pain. And yet everything is just here, this dust. Nothing changes in us in that sense. It is always just us. But it's void, it's omnipresent, it's always this silent. It isn't saying anything. It isn't telling you what it is, this reality. Saying, you know, here I am, Well, then what? It becomes something objective again then? Of course, everything within this, I've often pointed out, like even the stone here behind me, preaching the Dharma, truth, reality, teaching this. But everything, the planks and the floor, every thought and feeling is expressing reality. the truth, Dharma. And there's nothing but this. But if we insert, here I am, I'm here watching this, hearing this, feeling this, thinking this. Yeah. Yeah, if you interpret it that way, you see it that way, you feel it that way. But you try to defend that. And we take you through many different ways of you know, accounting for all of this here in our teachings, point these things out. You won't find anything there that holds up that view of, well, here I am, taking in all of that out there. It's pretty hard to defend that, ultimately. It really can't be done, I don't think. Yeah, I've yet to see it. If you have something for me, let me know. But it's silent, and it's pure. It's just this, just us. It's not something else mixed in there with it. And then he says, it is glorious and mysterious, peaceful joy. Yeah. Well, I would say, yeah, it's glorious if you compare it to things. But if we're talking about just this in totality, what's to compare it to? It's glorious? It's shabby? It's what? Is there anything to compare? And then also, we say mysterious, and this is the one that really catches us. Maybe not so much the glorious stuff, maybe we're not thinking so much in those terms. But we do, in quiet, settled moments, maybe we settle down here and we might begin to notice that, you know, this seems a pretty mysterious place here where we are. And what's going on? How did we get here? You know, where are we going? What is this all about? And sometimes that can be a kind of a wonderful, exhilarating feeling. Other times it can be maybe a little spooky, scary. But it is certainly kind of puzzling. And we can spend time there looking at that and sinking ever deeper into it and begin to really puzzle as to what is this? Even to the point where we ask, why is it this and not nothingness? What? And of course, That can seem kind of vexing at times. But the problem is, and this is what we don't recognize, the reason we will even think this or feel this way, and I'm well acquainted with it. In my younger days, I spent quite a bit of time just exploring this, feeling it, noticing it, asking about it. In my own mind, and maybe in others and books and things as well. So I'm quite familiar with this feeling that this is all a mystery. Or we might attribute it to some omnipotent power of some kind that maybe created it or made it or whatever. And I mean, maybe that gives us a little comfort that at least somebody's in charge of something. There's got to be the work of something or someone. But just stay with it, stay with it. You notice that, well, that's just an idea that you got there. And maybe it's a comforting one, maybe, maybe not. So what is this then? What is this? And then it seems kind of mysterious here. He says, yeah, so it's glory. Well, sure, this is grand, this life here, all of this, rather somewhat. We could say glorious, yeah, well, compared to any little thing within it, perhaps. And it's mysterious. Yeah, well, if you didn't ask the question, or it's not so bad asking the question, that's okay, ask the questions. What is it? But it's when you're actually seriously looking for an answer. And you might even come up with one, or you'll be handed one that other people have worked out for you ahead of time and all that, but you're still going to be left with mystery. What is this? That question never gets answered. What we miss by we continue to seek out something, and we miss the fact that you don't need to answer this question. You can't answer it. But it's sort of a bogus question. It's a flat earth question. It comes from the fact that we feel like, well, here I am, and we're seeing this objectively out there, and I want to know about this, and I even seem to be kind of a part of it here. And we just remain caught. We can dismiss it all, like, oh, this is nonsense, and so we dismiss it in disgust. Actually, that's probably not too bad, because at least you won't be busying yourself with something that doesn't really need that much attention. Other than just to notice it, though. That this seems to be kind of a mysterious thing here, but through that we might begin to realize why. Well, it's because of our grasping and insisting and wanting to put something there, and it's because of our strong conviction that I am here, that I am, and then there's all of that out there. But we don't notice that it's all devoid of any atom of objectivity here. So when he says here, it's glorious and mysterious, peaceful joy, I think it's just enough to say it is peaceful joy. And akin to what the mezzo-soprano came to at the end, that everything is all right. Not as a wishful view, like, oh, I wish, I hope. That's sort of where she was maybe when she was looking at the sun shining and the birds chirping and all of this in the second song. And that was fine. She felt pretty good at that time. But it doesn't last. It comes back and she sinks back into her dark mind. This is different. You realize, and you can realize just by noticing what is taking place here, that this sorrow, this kind of pain, is coming from the fact that there seems to be this need to grasp, I want an answer. Yeah, you might feel like you want an answer, but you won't get an answer, or any answer you do get won't satisfy. Maybe temporarily, seems okay, but in the end, if you continue to watch your mind, you'll see in the deeper recesses of your mind, if I can use that kind of an image, I don't know. There's still disturbance there, disease. It is possible to see through all of this and to realize that all is all right, even including sorrow and the love and the world as a whole and dream. So he says, it is glorious and mysterious, but I would just say it is peaceful joy, and that is all. That is what this is, just peaceful joy. It's just peace, really. Even joy, maybe adding too much there. But it is peace. True, complete, total peace that your mind, well, you don't keep holding it as your mind, my mind, something like that, just tuning into just this. And even in the midst of the storm, as the soprano was singing there, the mezzo, she was saying that at the end, including the trauma, the pain, the sorrow. And with settling with that, and there's still peace, we can know this peace. Even in a painful and disturbed world, in this world that we're in, is very disturbed. It's mostly disturbed by our own doing. Just our own thinking alone. But of course, with that thinking, we have all of our doings. And with our doings, look at what we're doing to the planet. We're doing this. And then we see that we're doing things wrong. And then we want to do more things to correct that. And we don't recognize what we're doing. And how insane this is. And there were we to just simply stop, it is peaceful joy. It's just peacefulness. Peacefulness is there. If you stop swatting the surface of the water will settle out. That's its nature. This is your true nature. This is the nature of everything in totality. And out of this comes all the beautiful things that she became so happy about in the second song, the sunshine and the birds and the flowers. But of course, she didn't accept it then. She didn't see it. She didn't recognize it. But also the sadness. That's there too. It can all be enjoyed and taken in and fully understood without any sense that we have to shut something down or put it away or get something else or all of this. Maybe you say, well, even if I were to do that, but still the world is out there. Well, that's what you're saying, yes. The world is out there, you know, cranking away all this pain and sorrow. I got to get out there and do something. That's how you create it. Even when you want to do something you think is good, you can easily end up doing all kinds of things that just heaps more pain and trauma and difficulty into the picture. So he says here, it is a peaceful joy, he says, and that is all. Then he says, enter deeply into it by awaking to it yourself. You can enter deeply. Well, I don't know, enter. You're already in it. You're in and of this reality. And it has this characteristic of profound, total, complete peacefulness and understanding, knowing the nature of reality. This is yours. You even have it now. It isn't something you can acquire. You've never been without it. But we get sidetracked by all the various things that seem to appear here. But enter, you can enter, you know, enter into this, you know. You can enter into it by awaking to it. Yourself. Well, yourself, whatever that is. But you don't need something else. It isn't like there's something missing here and you have to acquire that and then you can enter in. You got to find the key for it or something like that so I can open the door and get it. Dogen points out at the end of Fukan Zazengi, you know, your treasure store will open of itself and you will use it at will. It's already open. Because if you don't see it, you don't know it's open. And so we go searching for something else that we think is the problem I got to settle. And then I'll have something. Or you can be like the soprano lamenting at the end, after this nice day, and she said, maybe my luck now will change. And then she says, 9-9. No, no, not for this won't happen to me. I remember feeling something like that as a young person when I had cancer, pretty bad situation. Stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma at a time when there wasn't much way to treat it except something newly came along just in time for me to partake of that, and I'm still here. But I remember at the time, the prognosis was pretty dismal for a while there, and even for a few years. And I'd hear stories of people who would recover from severe kinds of situations with cancer. And I always liked to hear that. Kind of just buoyed me up a little bit. But then, like with the soprano, you know, the mezzo, singing, no, no. Yeah, this is wonderful. It's great. It was a wonderful day. Maybe my luck will change. But no, no, this won't happen to me. And I can remember, I was only 32 years old when I found out I had cancer. And with a pretty dismal prognosis. And then it was easy for me to just slip into that. I hear these stories of others who did well. And that felt pretty good. I could put myself in that dream. But then I'd look at my situation. No, yeah, that's great for you. I'm very happy for that, but that won't happen to me. that won't be for me. Because the odds were really stacked against me. They appeared to be anyway, very much against me. Until at some point I caught myself. I realized what I was doing. I was saying this to myself. I was making, I don't know how I'm going to course through this disease. Is my life going to be over in a few months? Or even a couple of years? I'm a young man. But I didn't know. As it turns out, now I've lived more than half my life since that time. But at the time, I had no idea that. And it was easy to fall into a very sad and dismal. But I knew enough already at that point in this practice to recognize. I was watching my mind. I saw what I was doing. And I would just stop it. Stop the thinking. I was learning how to do that. Just to, don't dwell on those thoughts. I don't know what's going to happen. I wasn't denying my situation. It looked pretty bleak. I was fully facing it. But I didn't start telling myself that I know something that I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to die from this soon or at a much later time in my life. Anybody told me I'd be living well into my 70s. At that point, I probably would have been highly skeptical of that. But nobody did, and that was fine. But I didn't. I could just see what I was doing in my own mind. Just kind of undermining myself, and for no good reason. At that time, I mean, just as it is now, here I am. Just take care of this. Put one foot in front of the other and keep going. I don't know what's around the bend until I get to the bend. But I was also noticing when I get to the bend, and I could still it was always the same. Just put one foot in front of the other. You can deal with it then. If it shows up, you can deal with it. If you're imagining, you can't deal with it, and you feel helpless, and you're worried. So at least recognize when you're doing that. That'll take you a long way and allowing your mind to calm down, to settle down, to begin to resemble the mind of totality, wholeness, peacefulness. And then you can more easily deal with what it is you're facing right now in this moment. So this is pretty powerful stuff, and it is very realistic. A lot of times when we think we're being realistic, well, I've got a really bad situation, that might seem pretty, but the fact is, you don't know. The realistic one is to remind yourself, you don't know. Yeah, there's some things you're facing. Yeah, take care of them. As I did, I got the treatments the doctors recommended and stuff. So it doesn't mean you just check out. You know, it's hopeless or everything will be fine. It doesn't mean any of that stuff. It means just take up this moment, be right here, take care of it as it's facing you here. And knowing that when you do this, you can partake of that peacefulness, which is, you know, our Buddha nature. That settledness right here. You can find it. You can do it. And through that, too, some true, deep, profound understanding that didn't seem available to you before is just right there to inform you. So he says, enter deeply into this by awakening to it. Which means just sit down, watch your mind, realize when you're imagining something, fantasizing, creating some bogus reality for yourself or for your others or for the world and what's going on today. Yeah, in the world today, we're facing some really difficult stuff. As an old man now, I could say, well, I'm not going to be around for much of this now unless it starts happening. Well, it's already happening, things. And you younger folks, I'm concerned for you, but I'm telling you, this is what you can do. Because you might very much be facing something more than us older ones know. Probably even dreamed possible, many of us. Though I know it can get pretty bad. But you can find this spacious mind even in the midst of whatever's happening around you or to you personally, or something like that. That's where you want to go. Find that place. It's not finding. You don't have to go searching for it because it's over here. But just realize this and bring yourself back to it. Watch your mind. Realize when you're running off, basically into insanity. Bring yourself back here. Then you can deal with this moment, whatever it's coughing up for you in this moment. If you're here, you can deal with it. And of course, even though you are here, yeah, but if in your mind you're running around, then it's effectively you're not here. Just recognize what you're doing. Stop that and you'll realize you're here. Now you can deal with it. It's very simple. I'd say just trust it. And you have to exercise that a bit so you kind of know what to do. Stay with it. Otherwise, we go spinning off and we never think about that again. You have to come back, maybe hear another talk like this or something. I don't know. You have to take care of this. You have to take it up. And it really is kind of life and death, you know. Like what I was facing, it was in my face, the cancer thing. I couldn't ignore it. But unless it's really right up here like that, we can kind of ignore it. And we do. And we keep playing around. And then we try to put things together to make so that this will happen. Or I'll feel better if we just did it this way or whatever. Stop all that. That's the mezzo-soprano thinking, 9-9, this will not be for me. I mean, my luck won't change. Well, anyway. So he says, but you enter into this by waking up, basically, is what he's saying here. And then he says, that which is before you, right here, right now, this, right here, this is it. This is it in all its fullness, utterly complete, he says. This is it. Wake up. And you're lucky. We're all lucky. Because it's just a matter of if we remember this. This is it. It's always just us here. No matter what the circumstances. And this is where you can deal with it. And you can deal with it by not trying to control it. Just thoroughly see it for what it is. The mezzo-soprano saying, yeah, both the love and the sorrow and the world and dream. It is all as if in a dream. And then he says, there's not beside, he says. I want to pull here. So this is it. It's entirely complete. And there is not beside. Actually, this isn't really what I was going to talk on. This morning, I was going to talk on the rest of what he says in this section, but which is really quite interesting. I've got a couple. I'll just read a little bit more. Maybe I won't say too much, though. But I thought most of my remarks would be. But he says, even if you go through all of the stages of a bodhisattva's progress toward Buddhahood, okay, you want to really work toward enlightenment, you're going to sit, practice, you know. And you go through all the stages of a bodhisattva's progress toward. You can read all about that, the stages of a bodhisattva. One by one, you go through these stages. When at last, in a single flash, you attain full realization, you will only be realizing the Buddha nature which has been with you all the time. And by all the foregoing stages, you will have added to it nothing at all, he says. Okay. Well, that's quite a bit to be said there. But that's a nice... I probably should end it here. But that's maybe kind of a nice ending to what it is that was stirring up, or what he was stirring up here before. So you can go through all these stages and work hard, and you take up this practice. You take up this practice in the wrong way. I'm going to sit. I'm going to come. Maybe I'll do these sushins here, which I hope we could get started again. There's interruption from the COVID, but... Sushins or not, or daily sit, but you're going to work hard at this, and then maybe you can find this mind and all that. No, nonsense. It's like Dogen says in the Fukan Zazengi, if you want to attain suchness, just this right here, this. Realize this. Awaken to the I don't want to use the word be, but it's this. What do you think you are? Are you something different than this? If you want to realize this, Then he says, then practice this. Suchness is the word he's using, coming from Sanskrit. But suchness, if you want to realize suchness, then practice suchness without delay. You don't have to go through all of this clamoring and struggling and the stages of the bodhisattva and all. Those kinds of teachings, they're fine. They might be helpful to kind of steer our minds in a general direction or something. But pretty quickly you have to start to be, there aren't any stages to this. You're not climbing a ladder, you know, going from one rung to the next. That's not how this works. It's in a flash. Did he say it here? It is something I was looking at here. Was that in today's reading? I was trying. In a flash, we realize this. Which then it can start to sound like, well, then you're saying, so this practice and all this arduous practice and sitting meditation, and it's not necessary, so why should I do it? There you go again, thinking and grasping, weighing out, and this is so hard to do, this practice, and so why do I put myself through all of this? We'll have thoughts like this. And that's all part of that, you know, 9-9. This awakening. It won't be for me. I'll just stop. Stop your thinking. Stop all of this. None of it will supply you with what it is you want to awaken to. It is just here. Learn to catch yourself. Watch your mind. I learned that lesson pretty early. Watch your mind. But I had help from my mother, who never studied any of this stuff or practiced it. She was a very good Christian. And I would say lived a very good Christian life. Truly, honestly, a very decent and wise woman. I was very lucky to have her as a mother. I remember as a little boy when she'd scold me when I'm misbehaving or whatever. And she would just say, look at yourself. She wouldn't characterize what I was doing or saying or, you know, that was bad or that I was bad or anything. But she's just, I was getting out of hand. I was getting, you know, throwing a fit or getting fussy or getting mad or what? Throwing my toys around? I don't know. But she'd kind of just help me get a little settled. And then she'd say, look at yourself. That's all she'd say. She wouldn't characterize it. I guess she trusted I could see what I was doing. So I might have been lucky in that way. Because later in life, then taking up this way, maybe it was something that I was accustomed to coming back to. Right? Take a look at what I'm doing. What I'm thinking. What I'm feeling. The judgment I might be throwing out there, whatever. Just look at that. Look at that. And it's really a matter of, this whole thing is just a matter of awareness. You don't have to do something about it particularly, necessarily. Maybe you do. If you've actually broken something or whatever, then maybe fix it or make amends or something. But apart from that, it's mainly wake up. And pretty much all the misery and anxiety and whatever it is that we create, for what is it, we might think it's something being put upon us. It's right here. You're in total control. If you just gather yourself, bring yourself back here, look at your own mind. Who's going to drop it if not you? But you can only drop it if you see it. See what you're doing. See what this means, being caught up in this way. You don't have to do this. You don't have to. You can drop it. If, as a species and what we're doing around the world and all that, most of what we do, if we could just drop it and just do the things that we need to do to nurture each other and to help each other and the planet. But first we have to come to this. Wake up. It's very simple. And it's life and death, and there's no fooling around with it. Anyway, boy, I've used up the whole hour. Maybe I better stop. But we have a couple of minutes. Any questions? Anybody out there in Zoom land? Oh, yeah, Mary.
Sometimes, I'm going to send that control, there's no question about it. And I notice that I can come back, but it comes back, and it comes back, and it comes back, mm-hmm. and it comes back.
Yeah. Well, but it can only come back if it wanders off.
So
the disturbance comes back. Oh, okay.
But
that's just your thinking again. It's not. Stop thinking. Stop thinking of it as the thing out there coming back to me and vexing me.
Thoughts keep coming up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. Notice that. It's like when I had my cancer. I remember going over to the center there and sitting in the evening. I remember one evening in particular. It was interesting as I sat there, facing the wall and. It was the worry. Suddenly, I just kind of seeing my situation, and it was like no hope. I'm going to die pretty soon, and it would just and then I'd realize what I was doing, and I could settle a bit, and pretty soon it just starts coming back. And it did that for a while. But after a while, too, if you really just stay with it, you start to realize, I'm doing this. I'm inviting it back. Partly because I'm upset by it. I don't want to have these thoughts. I want to, I'm trying to instruct you thoughts to stay away. I don't, and so we start fighting with it. Just see what's happening there. And be patient. I dealt with that for quite some time, with just watching my mind and even after I knew pretty well what was going on here and all of that, but I still had to deal with it. It isn't like, now I get it and everything drops away and I never have a worrisome thought take over. I mean, even now, 50-something years later, whatever it is, it still happens. I mean, but it usually doesn't get too far with me before I realize. But that's what it is. It isn't like, these thoughts come back, or whatever it is comes back. Yeah, it will. Yeah. But that's what Kagyu used to describe, like this Zazen is nothing more than you watch your mind, you bring yourself right here, you're sitting, kind of eliminated a lot going on in your environment, if you can. If you can't, well, so be it. But kind of minimize the activity around you and all of that. Of course, there's the business of your mind. Maybe you can settle that out too. But even though you do, pretty soon your mind goes off. And you bring it back. Your mind goes off. You bring it back. Your mind goes off. And he said, this is what Zazen is. Your mind runs off. When you notice it, you bring it back. And at first it just runs off. It's always running off. It's just, you almost never bring it back. And when you do, you get it here for a couple of seconds and pretty soon you're off on time. And it could be a horrible thought. It could be a joyous thought. It could be any number of things, But you just start to watch it. Get very familiar with your own mind and the carrying on of your own mind. And your mind will begin to behave. It will begin to settle down. It can still experience the joy and the sorrow. You don't throw any of that back, but none of this eats you up or kills you or something like that. You feel it, but then and you can really feel the pain and the sorrow when it hits. Even when, I'll confess, the other night in the auditorium there, as the mezzo-soprano was singing in the orchestra, and it was so beautiful and the intensity of the film, I teared up. I felt that. So we can still feel it. We don't become like a cold fish and we don't feel anything. Yeah. So, we, in a sense, we're not deprived of anything. But still, we don't have to be eaten up and devoured by it, or obsessed, or just constantly angry or seething underneath and all that stuff. That eventually can just settle down. But the thing is, you need to watch your mind. That's all. And yeah, things will come back. But things don't come back to me in the way they used to. As a young man, I had a very violent temper. But I never hit anybody. I never struck out in that way. I wasn't, but I remember I would just kind of blow up, so easily. I still have that tendency. I just have to just watch myself a bit, Usually within a minute or so, I realize what I'm doing, and I just have to laugh at myself for being so stupid, because I know better. But at the frequency and the intensity of it all, it's not there anymore, as it once was. But that's gradually over time. Even after I really understood this, I still had to watch that, because that was easy to happen. I could say, that's sort of my nature, that's how I am, but no, that's not it. I'm not any particular way. And if I'm careless, some of those old bad habits or whatever they were would still come creeping back in. The unhealthy ones. But if we're watching it, if you don't watch this, then you're going to be at their mercy. But if you just start to watch it, and you have to be honest with yourself, and maybe I used to have to do this. I remind myself, now, do I want this victory in this little whatever's going on here? Or do I want to wake up, live out of awakeness? And when I'd remind myself of that, I want to be awake. And usually that works. Anyway, I have gone way over, so I better end it, but thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.